Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. On this week day, we highlight the art of the race, starting with a pair racing to stay ahead of everyone out to nab them. Hap and Leonard are the pair on the lam, and Sundance Television begins their misadventures Wednesday night. Executive producers Jim Nicol and Nick DiMicci join me next in an internet radio exclusive. Rail of Race got the green light last night on BYU TV, and this amazing race comes with genealogy and the oversight of a former SportsCenter anchor person. Catch up with executive producer Dan Debenham from Salt Lake City later this hour. Also ahead, the Oscars dip in viewers despite Chris rocking, plenty more ahead in NCIS, and our classic trivia question of the week. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you today by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. You can listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Happy to have you with us on this final day of February, and for the first time in 4 years, it's a leap one. So we're delighted you're joining us for the program All About Television. And we invite you to leap in the thick of the conversation with some great people ahead in the next hour. All you have to do is give us a ring. And how do you do that? You use this number, 646-652-2906. You have a question or comment for any of our guests? That is the deal. 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio. If you're shy about using the phone, that's no problem with us, because we got a chat room at blogtalkradio.com. It's Simon Apple04 by name, and Rick Webb, our good friend from Philadelphia, is in the room. So either way, we do hear you. And while the program is on the air, you can connect with others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon at the top of the screen, follow the instructions, and other people can connect with you right now. 57 degrees on top of the hour, and we'll have the duo behind Happy Leonard on Sundance TV after these news notes. More than 37.2 million viewers caught the Academy Awards on ABC last night. That is down 6% from last year. And if the early Nielsen estimate holds, the Chris Rock-hosted ceremony may be the lowest Oscar viewership since 2009. Also, ABC's red carpet coverage was off 9% from 2015. Still, Rock's hosting earned raves for his pointed humor at the controversy, or elephant, in Oscar's room. No actors of color nominated for the second straight year, and few people of color among the other categories. NCIS has some rejoicing underway this afternoon. The high-flying CBS drama will keep new episodes coming through 2018 under a rare and new two-year renewal by CBS. Mark Harmon will stay on in the lead role. And Amazon gave Mad Dogs the boot, not bringing it back for season two. In this case, Amazon and the producers could not agree on a storyline for a second season. And that is news notes for today. And now let's get to the thick of Happy Leonard, which premieres Wednesday night at 10 o'clock on Sundance TV. Joining me here in New York, the executive producers, in one case also a director-writer, and the other case a writer. It's Jim Nicol and Nick DiMicci. Jim and Nick, welcome aboard.
Hi there.
Thanks for having us.
And Jim, we'll start with you. This is sort of the latest episode of a journey both of you have in chronicling the works of author Joe Lonsdale. How did you both get involved with his work?
Well, I fell in love with his stuff back around 2003 after seeing a movie called Bubba Hotep that was based on one of his novellas. And I really loved that and tracked down everything he'd written after that, including the Happy Leonard series. And along the way, stumbled on a book called Cold in July that we also fell in love with. And we adapted that and made that into a movie that was released about 2 years ago. All the while, just been a big fan of his and love his stuff and love his style and how he mixes genres. And it's felt like a great opportunity to sort of transition into the TV world with him.
Mm-hmm. Nick, when you read his novels, his novellas, he comes across as like a new William Faulkner. He sort of has that kind of South style, but he also has a very noir attitude in his work.
Yeah, it's definitely Southern Gothic in overtone. There's it's one of Joe's things, kind of always, almost in his work, which I find kind of intriguing and interesting, especially in a noir world, and the pulpy edition.
Yeah, very pulpy.
Go ahead, Jim.
I was just saying, yes, it's very pulpy.
The first thing I thought of when hearing about your program, Jim, was Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, except this doesn't take place in the West, it takes place in the South, 1980s, and this pair is even more mismatched than what Paul Newman and Robert Redford did so brilliantly on the screen.
Yeah, that's good. We use that as a reference. You know, that was something we talked about a lot. But, you know, especially the fact that these guys are kind of brothers and they have each other's backs. And, you know, they couldn't be more different otherwise, you know, ideologically. You know, one's an ex-hippie, you know, one went to Vietnam and considers himself a Republican, although that was 80s. That was a different brand of Republican. One's gay, one's straight. They're both sort of looking for love, you know. One's white, one's black. One's sort of a bleeding heart and the other one is a little bit more pragmatic about life and what he gets himself into. So, but, you know, through the whole thing, you know, they find themselves in these sort of pulpy crime stews that they quickly get in over their heads in. And it's really they wind up relying on each other to get out of it. But there's a big strong through line there of a brotherhood and these two guys who are sort of both failing to make a living and can barely get above the poverty line, and yet they share this sort of moral, kind of old West, almost cowboy sensibility of like honor, even if they're not, you know, the slickest guys in the world.
And also, Nick, it doesn't matter what scrape this pair gets into. It's like everything that could possibly happen to them shows up in the course of an episode.
Yeah, I mean, they're just two of those guys. We compared them somewhat to, you know, they're Robin Hood-esque. I mean, they always set out to do the right thing, and even if it's done in the wrong way or for the wrong reasons, and they always end up in trouble. I mean, it's very hardy boys in that sense, and, it's a throwback to that kind of, you know, just fun jaunt.
Mm-hmm. How did you approach doing this, given that this is not a one-shot novel set of characters here? These are characters that have been involved by Lanthe in not just novel form, but novellas, short stories. There's a big saga here. So when you, both of you, and Lanthe got started with this, how did you approach it?
Well, I think we started, we looked at the first book because it's a good, you know, we knew that the first season was going to be 6 episodes. You know, hopefully we get more seasons. But whereas most seasons of television, you know, you're getting around 10, 13 episodes all the way up to 20 if you're network. We knew that it was going to be a shorter season. And the shortest and sort of most self-contained one in here is the first book. You know, I think Joe wrote it. He didn't know if it was going to be a series at the time. He just started with that one. So I think it was a good sort of introduction to the guys, but it also felt like, you know, you could wrap it up in 6 episodes. If it didn't go further, it ends at a place that feels sort of satisfying, yet, you know, we definitely leave it in a spot where it leaps out to do more. So that felt like the best spot to sort of kick into it. We set it up so that if there's another season, knock on wood, we get to jump into the second book, which is probably the best known of the book, and I think kind of the most beloved of the books. And from there, it has a lot of potential to sort of branch out, and we can have some fun with it. You know, I'd like to think that we could keep it alive as something that we do the book, but we also we spread it out, we expand it, we explore some things the book doesn't. We throw some curveballs, you know. Hopefully it's something that if you're a fan of the book and you come in, it feels like it, yet there's new things for you to discover. And if you're, you know, a complete novice, you know, you get to sort of pick up and jump right in. That's kind of how it started so far. Then it'll evolve, you know, as we find out if there's more.
The first episode of Happen Leonard, season one, hopefully season one of many, premieres on Sundance TV this Wednesday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, and it is Sundance TV's first original new series of the year. And again, that is 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on Sundance TV. We've got the key executive producer of the program with us here in New York, Jim Mickle and Nick DiMicci. They're both with us live this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Applebaum also being with you on this leap day from the Big Apple here on Blog Talk Radio. If you have a question or comment, Give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Next Monday night, Damien, the long-awaited TV series adaptation of the classic movie franchise The Omen, premieres on A&E paired with the new season of Bates Motel. And Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we'll have an interview-exclusive interview right off the bat with its executive producer, someone who also made The Shield and then The Walking Dead happen. Glenn Lazar is my lead guest on Friday right here on the program. Also joining us will be the entertainment editor of the popular magazine The Week and its website, TheWeek.com, Scott Meslow. We'll talk about how the first 2 months of 2016 have gone so far with new series, what's coming up next month, including Happen Leonard, and we'll also get into some Oscar talk as well, how it works as a TV show, going up on the news note that we did earlier in the program. So join us with Glenn Lazara of Damien and Scott Meslow of The Week Entertainment Editor. They're both with us live at Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. You got Dreamcast, both of you, in this show. How dreamy are they?
Very. They're very dreamy. We lucked out with those three. Like, we really, really, really lucked out. You know, we had our sights set high, and when you read the books, you come away with, like, a strong impression of who those guys and gals are. And, you know, we really couldn't have done better than that main three, James Purefoy, Michael K. Williams, Christina Hendricks, and even after that, in the Jimmy Simpson, Bill Sage, Pollyanna McIntosh, it was just really a awesome cast from top to bottom.
Nick, we know how powerful the top three are. James, for his wonderful work opposite Kevin Bacon on The Following for the last couple of years. Michael K. Williams, of course, so brilliant on The Wire. And then Christina Hendricks, the Emmy Award nominee for all these years on Mad Men. And they're all known for giving very strong, very rich, in-depth portrayals. How do you mesh them so that they become a really tight unit on your program?
I think they kind of just did it on themselves. I mean, they're all top-notch professional actors, and they're all really nice people, and it's always a gift to get nice people on set, and I think they just kind of got it. I know James and Michael had a history. They had worked together before and were actually good friends, so that was really a big bone for us, because it really helps when the actors don't have to develop that. When the love between them is already there, then the camera can just have fun catching it.
Jim, where did you produce it?
Shooting on location really helped too, I think, because, you know, everyone's sort of out of their home element and thrown into a situation together in a new place, and I think that also helps kind of connect people like that.
Where did you produce it? Where did you shoot?
Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
That's,
yeah, the
where the Killing Fields series, the true crime show that Tom Fontana and Barry Levinson did.
Yep. There's a lot of stuff. Well, at the time, there's a bunch of stuff there. You know, a lot of stuff kind of flocks to New Orleans and shoots out of there. It was kind of nice to feel like you're sort of out of that circle of where it's really saturated. A lot of people are shooting. But it was kind of perfect for us because it caught, you know, the East Texas is where it's set. And Joe's always very specific that it's not West Texas. It's not dry and dusty, and there's not cactuses and stuff, what you kind of think of in traditional sort of West Texas feel. So it's, you know, it's very dank and has a lot of pine trees. It's very wet. It's very lush, very green. And Baton Rouge was kind of the perfect mix that caught that and a little bit of that kind of Cajun flavor, you know.
Mm-hmm. Nick, one of the reasons why Sundance put your program on the air is because both of you have had experience, because of your previous film, with Sundance. What kind of sensibility off the film of that festival, which you're getting more involved with television, what kind of sensibility did you put in play doing Happen Leonard? What did both of you bring to the table? Because both of you not only executive produce, one of you directs and writes, and you, Nick, you write. So you have a
Well, I think a big part of it was, I mean, coming off of Cold in July, I mean, I think it was an obvious no-brainer for Sundance to say, hey, these guys can handle Lansdale. And then I think what I like about it most, and this is due to Jim, Jim, I don't think he made a television series. I think he made a series of low independent movies, and it plays like that. And I knew that going in as a writer that he wasn't going to to try and do a television thing. He was going to try and do his thing and make it work for television, and I think he succeeded.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim, what? How do you classify your thing? Is it classifiable, or or is it something like in your work you just like you figure it out as you go?
Yeah, I don't know if it is classifiable. Hopefully not. You know, I like, and I think one of the reasons why I really gravitated to Joe's stuff is not sort of clicking into one genre, you know. And I think of the four features we've done, I think they're all have their sort of their feet in a couple different zones. You know, it's a little bit of horror, some science fiction, some drama, some melodrama, you know, some Western, and some historical fiction, you know. So I think, you know, it's tough to pitch that kind of movie. And I think we sort of saw that early on. It's tough to figure out how to sort of survive when everyone wants something that sort of easily fits into a very easily definable genre. So I think a lot of times our stuff is kind of falls through the cracks or is considered sort of tweener genre. And I think the same thing with Joe. And I think Joe's been doing it long enough that he sort of has identified his own, created his own genre in a way. Hopefully that's something that Nick and I can do also. And I think the show, I think, does that. You know, I think, I think mostly it's character-driven genre. And that genre is noir, thriller, pulp, you know. Yet it's not just relying on that stuff. There's also some really interesting character stuff going on. So, and now we have the time to explore that, where it can be tough in film. So, so you know, hopefully it gets a little bit, you know, hopefully it's just kind of a thick stew of a lot of different things.
Well, with that thick stew, staying with you, Jim, how do you bring noir to life? Did you sort of go back to, let's say, some of the classic movies of the 40s and 50s that sort of defined that genre?
Yeah, a little bit of everything, really, you know. There's also, I think, the 80s also, and that's where the show is set. You know, I think that also gets into its own brand of noir and thriller, and even specifically like rural noir. You know, that was something that even the 90s was, you know, felt like that was sort of a popular subgenre. You know, that was stuff that I grew up on and was really into. And I think Joe, because he was writing that, obviously, like it taps into a lot of that. So, yeah, a lot of it was kind of going back and looking at that. You know, this season also is a treasure hunt. You know, we like to think that each season, each book is sort of its own story. You know, it gets into murder mysteries at some point. It gets into sort of Western siege movies, you know. And if anything, this is like a sunken treasure movie. So we even got into, like, Treasure of the Sierra Madre when we were talking about sort of how stuff was going to flow in this first chunk.
Nick, is every episode a contained adventure unto itself, or do you have an overriding story beyond the here's this pair that somehow get along and they're constantly on the run?
We've laid in a backstory that's begun on top of Joe's stuff. Joe never wrote an origin story for Happenland or anything like that. So we have placed the markers for now, you know, to see where it goes if we get a second season, third season, and beyond, that we can definitely develop further as we go.
We've got the executive producers of Happen Leonard coming to Sundance TV this Wednesday night. Jim Nichol and Nick DiMicci, they join me here in New York this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Happy you are with us on this final day of February 2016. It's a leap day. It only comes once every 4 years, so it's doggone special. And we've got some super people that make it special for us today. And if you want to talk to them, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or you go to our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. We welcome at least guest 802 into the room. So have your say. We do appreciate it. Coming up a week from today on the program, we will help kick off March in part with Chris Brancato. He is the former executive producer of Narcos, made that first season work on Netflix, and now he's doing Of Kings and Prophets. It premieres a week from tomorrow on ABC. Chris Brancato of Kings and Prophets, he joins us 1 week from today, right here, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And I believe we have a call, so we're going to take it. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hey, Simon. It's Rick Webb calling from Philadelphia.
Rick, go for it.
Hey, guys. Just wondering, like, since you guys are both executive producers on this show, like, did it take any work to convince anybody that two East Coast guys, like from Northern East Coast, could do a, you know, a Southern, like Texas, you know, kind of bass show?
But we, well, first, hi, thanks for your question. No, actually, and only because we had just done Cold in July, you know, which is takes place in the exact same East Texas town as Happy Leonard. It's also based on Joe's work. We had just done that movie, and I think, you know, that's pretty thick with Texas flavor, and, you know, I think people think we got it right, even though we shot that in upstate New York, of all places, to look like Texas. So, no, I feel like by the time we came out of that and rolled into this, it felt like, if anything, like these guys had just done it. Whether it works in the show or not, you can tell us.
Well, how'd you guys do it? Did you go stay down there for a little while or just read up on it or watch some movies?
We both spent time. Nick was actually just there this weekend. He just got back. Isn't that right, Nick?
Yeah, I was down there this weekend. I mean, but beforehand, I mean, I think most of it is just, you know, I'm a voracious reader, and I like reading because, you know, you get to live different lives, and I read a lot of the stuff that takes place in the South, and I kind of felt like I knew, you know, especially after reading Joe's stuff again, like I knew the place. And I think we just kind of went from there. And also, Jim and I both have a, even though I was born in the city, I mean, Jim and I both have a big affinity for country and outdoorsishness, and I think that was a pretty easy thing to establish at that point. I don't think it was that hard for us to do.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
The
well,
books are also so,
best...
so detailed, you know, they're so, that's one of the best things about his books is he colors them in so beautifully and with such detail that you can always kind of lean back on that, too.
Yeah, Mr. Lansdale's a character himself.
Yeah.
I've listened to some interviews. So, well, best wishes, guys.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to be checking this out.
Cool. Thanks. I hope you like it.
Sweet. Thank you.
Thanks. And thanks, Simon.
You're welcome, Rick. Anytime. Take care. Rick, a good friend from Philadelphia, right here on Tamavi Televised. Nick, you have something else that's quite notable in your career, and that is, and a lot of people don't know it, but we're exploring right now, is that you were part of the first episode of Law & Order that NBC presented back in the early 1990s. It was the third episode that was actually produced, but the first one that we all got to see. How did you get into that role? And secondly, did anybody at the time think that Law & Order was going to be the long-running hit it turned out to be?
First question first. I was studying at the time, actually. I was studying acting with Michael Moriarty at the time, so that's how I got the role. And yeah, I think that people were excited about the series, and I think it's success since it's you know, opinion. I mean, it's you know, it was a procedural. It was Dragnet updated in a sense, except from both sides of the fence. And you know, it was a terrific cast. It was George Zunda then, and Michael Moriarty, and just you know, great experience to be a part of that, something that historic.
Mm. Moriarty was a wonderful actor on that show, but also before that I had seen his Emmy-winning performance in The Glass Menagerie opposite Katharine Hepburn, and also Sam Worthington, who later replaced him as Law & Order. And who knew,
yes,
of course, was a very famous New York actor with Joseph Papp, Much Ado About Nothing, those productions. Who would have thought that would have happened, that you'd have two people who really set the bar in terms of being the lawyer on Law & Order in the same movie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, Michael Moriarty is an amazing character, and he's done a lot of stuff. He's a musician, you know, he's done live theater, he's done everything, and, you know, so it was kind of a very interesting thing, and then the whole thing with him and Janet Reno, where he left the series and gave up his citizenship, and I think he's still in Nova Scotia, as far as I know. He won't come back.
Well, I hope he finds a way to get back into acting, because one of my favorite actors, when I watched him on first with Glass Menagerie, that fantastic performance, I thought, and then with Law & Order, he really set the bar for everybody, along with all the original cast. And who knows? SVU may very well get to that 20-season mark and maybe even top it the way it's going.
Well, let's hope so.
Mm-hmm. Jim, before we let you and Nick go, what do you hope people take away from your series? Is it Lonsdale's writing? Is it the flavor? Is it the actor? What do you hope people take away most from what you're doing?
Well, I hope they fall in love with these guys. You know, they're the driving force of the show. They're in, you know, almost every scene together. I think they're great together. That's what most people love from the book. That's what I love. So I hope that carries over. I think, I hope weekly people want to tune in and check out what these guys are up to. But I think also a tonal thing, you know, I think there's something about these that they make you think a little bit. They make you laugh a lot. But then right when you let your guard down, they sneak up on you. They do something kind of twisted and dark and get under your skin. And I like something like that, that kind of gives you the full range of the viewing experience, you know. So, and there's not a lot that does that on television. I think, there's some great things, and then there's a lot of things that sort of stays comfortably in a comfort zone. Hopefully we get a little bit out of that comfort zone and stay unexpected for every couple of weeks.
I
think what Jim said, and then I also think, I mean, there was the social relevance of what it is. I mean, Joe was way ahead of his time in creating a gay character who is not your typical gay character. It's not a gay character we see often, and I think the way that's dealt with and the love between a straight guy and a gay guy and that's all okay is a very interesting kind of thing, you know what I mean? And I don't think anybody's dealt with it like this yet. So I'd like to see how that lands. You know, I think a lot of the macho guys out there who normally wouldn't watch anything with a gay guy in it are going to find themselves watching it and falling in love with Leonard and maybe changing their minds a little bit.
Sundance TV enters the zone of Hap and Leonard this Wednesday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. Check your local links for where Sundance TV is available in your area on cable and satellite. And for more details about the program and the channel, here's where you go online, www.sundance.tv. That's www.sundance.tv. Hap and Leonard, based on books by Joe Lonsdale. I read the books. Terrific reading, and I'm sure a terrific series starting Wednesday at 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. Tim Mitchell, Nick Demetri, executive producer of the show, thank you again for coming on. Congratulations on getting your program off the ground, and I have a feeling it's going to have quite a long and wonderful run, and we appreciate you being aboard.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, and thanks for helping to spread the word.
You are welcome, Jim and Nick. All the greatest. Take care.
Take it easy now. Ciao, ciao.
Jim McNeil, Nick Demetri, joining us live from New York. Our Climate Trivia Question of the Week coming your way, but first some thoughts about the fine people at Audible.com. You know, they're a leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment and information. More than 180,000 titles. I'm sure those Hap and Leonard titles are right in there, and you can choose them and others. You can also listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now. And if you sign up at this URL, audibletrial.com/televised, that's audibletrial.com/televised, you get one free audiobook and a one-month trial of their service. And given the fact that Audible is an Amazon company, you can bet the customer service outstanding. If you're going to try your own stand, you catch his nightly interviews on PBS or Bloomberg Television, well, quite of his best efforts are available to you anytime at audible.com. And so is Joseph Campbell's great interview series with Bill Moyers, The Power of Myth, a PBS classic. A library of stuff for you available, all different types, all different subjects, and all available for you. And if you do become a subscriber to audible.com, membership is low. You can exchange books anytime you like, and if you cancel anytime, you keep the audiobooks you have. So check out the trial and get a free audiobook in the process. audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. Audible.com, an Amazon company and a great place to be inspired, informed, and entertained. Now it's time for our regular feature, the Classic Trivia Question of the Week. We had a winner for the first time last week, so let's go 2-for-2. I mentioned Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid with our interview with the executive producer of Hap and Leonard. And back in the early 1970s, that famed movie became the impetus for a television series that lasted a year and a half on ABC. It was called Alias Smith and Jones, and that's the foundation of our question this week. Name the original co-stars of Alias Smith and Jones. Name the original co-stars of Elliott, Smith, and Jones. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and your mailing address. And if you are first with the correct answer, you will win Nobody Dies in Hollywood, the acclaimed first novel by the wonderful writer-producer John Wilder, Streets of San Francisco and Centennial Fame. The novel is published by Balcony 7, and it's yours if you are first with the correct answer. So give it a go, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Please include your name and where you're from. You can also use Twitter to give us the answer. Use this hashtag TWBT. That's Twitter, hashtag TWBT. Twitter apps made available by fine folks at Hopscotch. The other people can invite you to create your own social soundtrack. Learn how from Money Monica and the crew at www.hopscotch.com. And if you just missed the question, don't worry. I post it tomorrow morning on my Facebook page and my own Twitter hashtag at UBC Simon TWBT. That's UBC Simon TWBT. Be in and win. So play along and all the very best. When we come back, we're in Salt Lake City. We're checking in with former ESPN Sports Center anchor Dan Debenham. His latest work with his own production company premiered last night on BYU TV. The executive producer, Ronald Grace, joins us live from Salt Lake City after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, the best internet radio around. More than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for Girls in Heels based on the popular Bravo show. Check out the action and the talk about Girls in Heels Mondays, various times, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, you have the best meet chart 24/7. At YouTube.com. And you can also check out all the Blog Talk Radio podcasts, including our show, at Apple TV's brand new app, the iTunes Podcast app. You can hear and watch our program on your television set if you have Apple TV 2.0. Welcome back to Marvin Televised. I'm Simon Applebaum here with you live on this leap year day of 2016. Happy to have you aboard this Monday. Another great guest coming your way shortly. If you have a question or comment for him, give us a ring, 646-652-2906. That number good anyway. You're catching us country around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio. And we have a bunch of people in our chat room already. SimonApple04 by name at blogtalkradio.com. So use that phone or the room. Either way, we want to hear from you. Last night, amid the Oscars, The Walking Dead, even William Shatner on Cutthroat Kitchen, BYU TV, that is the national network of Brigham Young University, which we feature on this program several times, started a brand new series. It's called Relative Race. Think of it as a mix of The Amazing Race and genealogy. And it comes from the oversight of a former anchor of ESPN Sports Center, who's had his own production company for quite a while and a good association with BYU TV at that. Joining us live, an interview exclusive from Salt Lake City, Utah, Dan Debenham. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Simon. How you doing?
Very, very fine, thank you. How did you get involved with BYU TV? And then we'll get into this particular show that you started last night.
Yeah, you know, it's a great question, and I remember it well. About 6 years ago, BYU TV reformed themselves and renamed themselves BYU TV, and it all happened because Brigham Young University's football team elected to leave what was then the Mountain West Conference and become another powerhouse independent. And BYU TV recognized that there were going to be fans all around the country and, in fact, all around the world that really wanted to follow BYU sports. And so what was called the Blue and White Network kind of got rebranded and rebooted as BYU TV. And with that came an incredible new facility that they built down on their campus, which is about 35 miles, maybe 30 miles from where our offices are at here in Salt Lake City. Brigham Young University is down there in Provo, and they invested tens upon tens of millions of dollars into a new BYU broadcast center. And I was actually reading my local newspaper about this new facility and how it was going to be state-of-the-art and how they were looking for new programming to help kind of launch this new network. And when I read more about what they were trying to do there, which was, you know, their subtitle of BYU TV is Seeing the Good in the World, it really meshed with what myself and my business partner here in Salt Lake City, when we formed LensWorks 15 years ago, we said that we wanted to create programming with a purpose. We were kind of tired of seeing, you know, television shows that were kind of always showcasing the worst in people, and we wanted to do something that was very, very positive. And that feeds very much off of what I was doing with ESPN all those years. My main role and responsibility at ESPN for about 40 weeks of the year was to host a weekly show that was done on location called SSA. The acronym stood for Scholastic Sports America, the youth of America doing their best. And that show was truly that. It was, I mean, I remember one of the first athletes we did was on Emmett Smith, and the last one I ever did when I was at ESPN as an employee was on Kobe Bryant. And so, you know, there was just an amazing span of tremendous athletes that spanned that time period that I spent at ESPN. But it was always with the spin, a look at, you know, a very positive aspect of this, the youth of America doing their best. And so Tom Zadunich, my business partner, and I, we wanted to form a company that was about creating programming with a purpose. And so when I read about what BYU TV was trying to do, I knew I had to talk to them. I got a hold of some of the programming executives down there, and fortunately we saw eye to eye, and I told them about a show that we had in mind that would go hand in hand with BYU's football schedule, believe it or not, and that's where the relationship was formed. 4 years ago, we created a show called Dining with the Dean, and we went out and featured clubs at different universities all across the country. And those clubs, it was a reality show. It was a competition show, cooking show, very, very popular at the time. We came in unannounced and featured two different clubs on campuses that then had 3 hours and $30 to plan, present, and to a dean of students, a three-course meal. The dean of students then had to, in a blind test, determine who had done the best job in 3 hours, and $5,000 was presented to the charity of choice to the winning club or team on every campus. It was a really great show. We did 13 episodes. It had great reviews, and we've been looking for a way to work together ever since that time. And when BYU TV came to us about a year ago, and told us that they had envisioned a show that would go hand in hand with genealogy, specifically Ancestry DNA, the new division of Ancestry.com, they said, we need a show, but we need to really push the boundaries. We want it to be creative. We want it to fit what's out there right now while still, you know, staying true to our objective, which is seeing the good in the world. And so we put our creative hats on here and sat in a room and with a great big whiteboard. And, you know, over the course of 2 months, we refined this show, which launched, as you said last night, called Relative Race. And it really is the amazing race meets who do you think you are meets genealogy. But it takes genealogy in a direction that nobody's really anticipated. Genealogy is traditionally, of course, about looking up, finding relatives that have passed on. This show is anything but that. This show takes four couples, races them across America, and every day is a new episode. This is 10 episodes. It took 10 days to race across America, and each day we provided those couples with clues on how to find relatives in a different town that they didn't know that they had and they had never met before. And so they would race to meet these new relatives all across the country. And the first one that wound up the winner in New York City picked up $25,000. But even the prize money was presented with a twist as well, Simon.
Yeah. Bring it to the twist. How easy or hard was it to collect the genealogy information about each of these couples? And then to form the race so that they had to go to specific places to find out that information.
Oh, wow. You know, Simon, I wish you had been with us during that time period. It was tremendously difficult. And we narrowed down. We received over 1,000 people that went to our casting website. It was TRR. It was just the acronym for the Relative Race. TRCasting.com at the time, and over 1,000 people went there. They needed to submit a 1 to 2 minute video telling us who they were and why they should be on the show. And through that process, we actually narrowed it down to 25 couples. And of those 25 couples, we sat in here and just went back and forth on who we thought would be the best television. But here is the problem or the challenge, and you just pointed it out. We may have found the couples that we wanted for television, but then we had to do all of their, first of all, they had to submit to DNA. Once we got the DNA matches back, we then went to Ancestry.com and professional genealogical researchers who then started mapping out and finding every living relative all across America. And we had to find a realistic course that would allow our couples to drive a reasonable distance each day from the West Coast to the East Coast. And that challenge was unbelievable. And as a result, several of the people that we actually wanted on the show, we just couldn't map out a race course for them. You know, they might have had 1,000 relatives in the Southeast, but virtually no relatives in the West. And so, we kept having to look at who's the best for television, but also gives us a realistic course that we can race them across America. So it was incredibly challenging.
Relative Races, the new series on BYU TV, premiered last night, and the next episode, number 2, happens this Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern. That's 5 p.m. Pacific, so there's no separate East-West Coast feed. You got to catch it when it airs live. It's 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Mountain on BYU TV. Dan Devenham is the executive producer of the series with his own production company, and he is live from Salt Lake City, Utah, this half hour on Tamarvi Televised. Happy to report this half hour as well. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York, 57 degrees at the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment for Dan, well, ring it in, 646-652-2906, or leave our chat room, SimonApple04, but it will get 803 and 812 into the room. Friday on Tamarvi Televised, Glenn Mazzara. He made The Shield and then The Walking Dead thing, and now he's executive producer of Damien. It premieres 1 week from tonight on A&E, coupled with the latest season of Bates Motel. And he's our lead guest on Friday. Also joining us, with I'm sure some thoughts about the Oscars last night on ABC and other things too, Scott Mezzo. He is the entertainment editor of The Week magazine and TheWeek.com. That's all coming up Friday, kicking off March with us. That's Tamarvi Televised, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Now, you see there's a catch with the prize, $25,000 up for grabs, but there is a catch, so what is that?
Yeah, that was interesting. We talked again. How can we flip things around from traditional television? How can we make it more interesting for the viewers as well as for the competitors? And so, at the very first of the race, which again that debuted last night. And by the way, if you missed the debut last night, it's repeating throughout this week, and you can always catch it online at BYU. I think it's BYUTV.org. At day one, when the four couples, we flew them to San Francisco. They started in San Francisco on Pier 39. And when they arrived, the very first thing that I asked, and it was determined through everyone that I should also host this show. As you mentioned, Simon, that's also my background. So I was an EP on the show, creator of the show, but also hosted the show. And so when they arrived there, as the host, I welcomed them all, and then I said, how many of you brought your phones? And, of course, every couple raised their hands, and I said, well, how many can do without their phones? And they all shook their heads, and I said, there's a bag being passed around in front of you right now. Put your phones in the bag. And some of them thought I was joking, and I was like, I'm serious. Put your phones in the bags, all GPS devices. And then we provided them with what we called their new GPS device to navigate across the country, and that GPS device was a paper map, and some of them had never seen a map before. And so we said, yeah, all GPS devices are gone. You're going to race across the country. We hope you like your relatives, and we hope that they like you, because when you meet your relatives, you're going to be spending the night with them. Again, another jaw dropper. They didn't know that. And then finally, we pointed out that you're racing for $25,000. However, there's a twist. The twist in that is that, and we went back and forth on this, Simon. Do we tell them the couples on day one, or do we tell the remaining couples on day 10 when they arrived in New York City? We determined as a creative group here that we would tell the couples on day one the following. And that was, we announced that you're racing for $25,000. However, there's a twist. If you are the ones that finish in first place and pick up that $25,000, you certainly have earned the right to keep it. But if you decide to, you can also give a portion of it or all of it back to the relatives that you've met along the way. And it was interesting to see what that did throughout the remainder of the race. As the couples talked about that as they raced across America, what should we do? Why are we racing? And initially, they all had a purpose for why they were racing and why they wanted to pick up that $25,000. But the interesting thing is throughout this race, as they met relatives they'd never met before, they didn't know that they had, some of those opinions and ideas changed, and we see that throughout the course of this series, and it's something that we were hoping would happen, and in fact it did.
Did any of the relatives involved suggest to the contestants, if you give some of the money to me, I'll donate to charity, or I'll donate to a project in my community I'm working on?
You know, that's interesting. I can share with you, without giving some of the nuances, the details of the show away, I can share with you that one of the couples, the couple that wins in the end determined that they wanted they did not want to keep all the money. And the couple that they, one of the couples that they decided to give money back to actually runs a charity. And that's what touched them so deeply, was what this couple, this family does and how they could help with a portion of their winnings. And so they elected to do that. Again, it's a really different show because there's so many deep, meaningful parts of the show. Now, there's lots of drama. There's plenty of barking and biking. You know, imagine sitting in a car for up to 8 hours a day with your spouse, and that could be up to 10 days straight. I'm surprised that we didn't wind up with an episode of Divorce Court. But there was plenty of drama, there's so many funny parts of the series that I'm telling you, some of them we're in here just every time I go back into an edit bay, I'm hearing producers and editors laugh out loud, and I'd run back to our edit bays and say, I got to see it, what's happening? And they'll show me, and I'm going, now that's funny, that's good television. But we have good television with a wide range of emotion, and that's what we were looking for.
And along the way, you also face this great unknown because in most instances, or all instances, these couples have not seen these folks face-to-face. So they have no idea, like, how they're living their lives today. They may have the idea, using the ancestry information, of, where they fit in their family, but they don't know, like, where they're at today, what kind of lifestyle are they at. Are they, like, on top of the world? Or are they, like, in jail somewhere for a crime they didn't commit?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. In fact, Simon, it goes deeper than that. These are relatives that they had never met before and did not know that they had. They didn't know that they had these relatives prior to, winding up in their driveway and knocking on their door. They didn't know that they had these relatives, and they don't know how they're related until they go in and start talking with these relatives. And to be clear, in episode one, that's why I hope your listeners, I hope they'll go online or go to BYU TV and watch the repeat throughout this week. They're repeating episode one throughout the week. But in episode one, one of our couples winds up with their relatives in Nevada. And they race from San Francisco over to Nevada. They meet with their relatives for the first time, and these relatives start telling this couple how they're related. And they say, and since it's aired already, I feel I can share this. So they say, now of course we're related through the Bundy line, and he goes, blah 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 blah. Here's so and so, here and so, your grandpa and my grandpa were brothers, or whatever they say. And then he looks at this married couple that's sitting in his back porch, and he looks at him and he says, well, look at that name. Does that name look familiar to you then in the Bundy line? He goes, Theodore Ted Bundy, the infamous mass murderer. And you just see the reaction of this couple, and, their jaws just drop to the floor as this guy just starts chuckling because he thinks, isn't that just terrific? I just told her who we're related to. Now, on the flip side, when we come back from a break, you find out that there is also a twist to that relationship, and it all works out pretty well. So,
Relative Race kicks off second episode this Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific on BYU TV. And as Dan mentioned, you can catch the first episode if you missed it last night throughout the week both on BYU TV and at their website, which is www.byutv.org. Dan Devenham, the former ESPN Sports Center anchor, is the executive producer of the series, has his own production company. We'll find out in a little bit what that company is up to down the road. And he joins us live from Salt Lake City this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Applebaum here with you live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. Not too late to get a question or comment in. Just use the phone and make the call at 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Next Monday on the program, my guest will include Chris Brancato. He's the person who brought Narco to life last summer on Netflix, and now he's doing the new ABC series of Kings and Prophets that premieres a week from tomorrow, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. Chris Brancato from ABC's of Kings and Prophets. He's one of our guests next Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And the following Friday, we will have the executive producer and writer of the new Lifetime miniseries, And Then There Were None, based on the classic Agatha Christie mystery tale. First time this tale has ever been done in miniseries form. Sarah Phelps, who last year wrote the acclaimed HBO miniseries The Casual Vacancies, based on the book by J.K. Rowling, will be our lead guest. Also on the program, we'll have the head of 5x5, Rick Ringbach, will join us. He's executive producing the new TBS relationship game show, Separation Anxiety, that begins next month. That's all coming up a week from Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. So aside from Relative Race, Dan, what else is you and your production company up to?
Yeah, thanks for asking. We have a great client back east there in New Jersey, Wyndham Worldwide, and we film all of Wyndham's hotels and resorts around the world and have a great time doing that. We also do an online travel show for them that you can catch at RCI TV. And again, we produce and I host that. And we, in fact, I just got back from British Columbia where we filmed four more episodes, as a matter of fact. And then this past summer we did a new series for National Geographic, for the National Geographic Wild channel. It was called United Sharks of America, and it was a fantastic countdown show, and we hope to be working with them again. It was a countdown show on shark attacks around the United States, and we took a scientific view of why these attacks are happening and why the particular attack happened. We talked with survivors and then scientists, and then we've created a new reality show. In fact, who knows, it may wind up on BYU TV, but we've got a new reality show that we're working on right now that's really, really interesting. It's on a catering company that does about 700 different catering events a year, and it's a family, a mother and her children, that work in this catering company alongside 600 other employees. But as the mother, the matriarch, says, she says, you know, I've got 600 employees, but my three most difficult employees are my grown children. And it really goes through the difficulty, all the ups and downs, and the wild, everything that happens behind the curtain, if you will, behind large and small catering jobs. But in the end, this family always comes together to pull it off, and we call it the big event because every event is a big event for whoever's getting the catering. So we continue to do jobs large and small, and we find the challenge of delivering or over-delivering on our clients' expectations. That's what we love to do, and it's what got me into television 30 years ago, and it's why I'm still digging it today.
A lot of people in the unscripted field are also getting involved on the scripted side of the business. Any thoughts of perhaps maybe diving in or wading into scripted at some point?
You know, that's a great question. We've always played, when I say we, I've got just a terrific, smart, creative business partner. And we've always talked about coming up with something scripted, specifically long format. There's a couple of movie ideas that we've kicked around. But we're also realistic in that is so tremendously difficult to go in without it being greenlit in advance of you doing the production. And since our background, since for the 15 years that we've had LensWorks Productions, and if you want to see what you're doing, you can go online and just check out lensworks.com. That's LENZWORKS.com. But, it's really hard to break into that field when it's not something you've been doing. And it's not something that we've been doing. So is it something that we'd enjoy doing? Yes, because we always enjoy a challenge. Is it something that we think we have a shot at in the future? Probably not, Simon. And you know what? That kind of stinks to tell it like it is, but you know, probably not.
Well, for now, there's Relative Race, and the second episode of this new BYU TV series will be running this Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Check your locals where BYU is in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program, and in one case, the network online, there's actually two websites you can go to. For both on the show, that's www.relativerace.com. That's www.relativerace.com. And as we said before, www.byutv.org. BYUTV.org. And for more news about Dan's company and what his company is up to, as we just mentioned, it's LensWorks, LENZWRKS, LensWorks.com. Executive producer Dan Debenham, thank you again for joining us. A pleasure all the way. We would love to have you back. Good luck with Relative Race. The early word from what I'm seeing on social media is really super, and I hope they have a wonderful run, more than one race. And by the way, since we mentioned the Philadelphia Sports Academy before, maybe one day I would love to see that show come back. I was a big fan of that show, what you did with it, what Chris Fowler did with it, those many years on ESPN. Love to see it come back. Maybe BYU could be the source for it.
Hey, you know what? I love that idea. And by the way, I pitched that idea to ESPN. I think there's a great place for that show again. So between you and I, let's work on it.
Okay, you got a deal. Dan, thank you again. All the greatest. Take care.
All right, Simon, you take care too. We'll talk soon. Bye-bye.
You got it. Bye-bye. Dan Debenham, former ESPN Sports Center anchor, head of his own company, LensWorks.com, and executive producer of Relative Race on BYU TV, joining us live from Salt Lake City. Friday on Smart Be Televised, we've got Glenn Mazzara, the executive producer and writer of Damien, coming to A&E a week from tonight, paired with the latest season of Bates Motel. And Scott Meslow, the entertainment editor of The Week magazine and TheWeek.com. Next Monday, we plunge into March even more with Chris Brancato, the executive producer of ABC's new biblical drama of Kings and Prophets. If you came in late on the program and you want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage, www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast version. It's available on iTunes.com. And if you have Apple TV 2.0, look us up on the new iTunes podcast app, along with other Blog Talk Radio favorites. You can hear and watch us on your TV set through Apple TV 2.0. Remember, we'd love to hear from you. What do you think about today's guest? What did you think about the Oscars on television last night? And where is your head at on where TV is at and where it's going? We love hearing from you, so communicate. Email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. That's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Please include your name and where you're from. That's how you get involved with our classic trivia question of the week. And if there's a TV show you think deserves more attention, let us know. We'll feature it in our Show to Know segment, which runs regularly. And if we do something from you, you, of course, will get the credit on the air. That's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. You can also find me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter at UBCSimonTWBT. That's at UBCSimonTWBT. As always, we appreciate what you have to say, because guess what? What you say matters. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associates Amy Mexico and Candace Williams. Andy Toh is Blog Talk Radio's general manager. The creator and chief executive of this very enterprise is Mr. Al Levy. Tommy Televised is brought to you today by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Don't forget, you can get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. Audible, an Amazon company. For Tommy Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a great rest of your leap day and February, and good start to March. We'll be back with you Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio. Be safe and be great. Until the next time, stay well. And stay tuned.